And I was self-medicating. I got into, I was taking a lot of cocaine, and that became, sorry, this is a lot, unloading
no,
a lot.
It's good.
I was, contemplating doing very bad things, and did to a point, try and attempt suicide, which, I'm glad didn't happen, but I... all of a sudden, the light came back at the end of the tunnel and I could see where I was going.
Hello and welcome to the Talking Head podcast. Welcome back if you're a previous listener. If you're new here, basically what we do is talk about mental health issues and stories every single week. We bring you a podcast every single week and we kind of keep it fresh. We talk about different topics every week and we get new guests on every single week as well. And basically that keeps you viewers engaged and basically keeps the podcast unique and different. And today I'm going to be joined by Blair, who's here to share his story. If you could give us a bit of an introduction as to who you are and a bit of a insight into what you've been through, so we get kind of like a bit of a blurb, and then we'll go into the specifics and explore your story.
Okay, yeah, so my name's Blair, I'm 38. I am joining UCA in October, as I'm sure a lot of the listeners will be as well. And I mean, it's something that's... sorry.
It's difficult to talk to a when you're being recorded, you then suddenly feel sort of on edge, on pressure. I've found that so much, and so has everybody that's been on it. It's like as soon as the cameras start rolling, you kind of think, "Oh shit!" Like, yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's like it's weird. But So when we're talking about your story today,
So,
can you give us a sort of two sentences to kind of describe your story? And I know that's probably going to be quite difficult, but if you can try.
I've suffered on and off over the years with mental health issues, and I got to a very low point about 2 years ago, which caused me to sort of change everything about my life. I gave up my job, I moved out of my flat, and decided to go into education. It's something I regretted that I didn't do when I was 18 or 16 when we left school. I just sort of had a complete rethink and had to make that decision about, my life. Either it was not going to carry on well, or I needed to stop and rethink the whole thing and do something drastic. So that's where I'm at the moment.
Right. So we should probably clarify, because we mentioned UCA earlier, we are both going into university in October. We're going in a very uncertain time. Obviously COVID has just taken over the world, but we're still going to uni, and it's going to be a fresh start for a lot of us, and it's a very exciting time, a very daunting time as well. But you were speaking about obviously how the fact you didn't go to uni beforehand.
Way back when I was 16, I left school, I was wanting to go to college, but sort of back then I didn't really have the support or any support system around me, everyone that was around me was telling me, just get into work, do an apprenticeship. So I went to work in pubs, and I became a modern apprentice trainee manager for a pub company. Did that for quite a few years, and then sort of spent most of my 20s between working in pubs and working in offices, but never really doing anything, never more above sort of entry level work, really. So,
So you were talking about having not much support levels, and no sort of like group there to support you. So when did you start realizing you had certain issues?
Yeah, like
what year?
So my father left when I was about five, and me and my sister were being brought up by my mum, who didn't have a support system, so you know, we didn't have any family. Right. No help. It was tough. She used to work sort of three jobs and whatnot, just to give us the basics. And when I sort of hit my teenage years, 12, 13, I think I'd sort of, you know, that was when I discovered that I was gay as well. And right. My high school experience really was quite a sort of lonely and difficult, you know. I suffered a massive depression throughout those years. I finished school, but I couldn't wait to get out of there, but I didn't really get any major qualifications. I sort of got like three GCSEs, drama, English and German or something like that.
Right, okay.
And being drama, C in English and C in German, so weren't bad grades, you know. I was never dumb, but I just wasn't happy, and I couldn't put anything into that. So, you know, all I wanted to do was leave school and leave that environment, and get into the working world. So college and that just seemed off the table for me, really.
So you were talking about how when you were young, you didn't really have that much support. I mean, obviously, it's a given. If you probably had the support, then you would have probably coped a lot better. But I imagine, was there even any level of support available? Because obviously, over the years, sort of funding into mental health awareness and just generally helping young people who are very confused has significantly improved, but was there any sort of support available to you?
Yeah. I think if I had had the same issues, but in sort of a time now, you know, I mean, there is so much more available now. There was nothing available when, you know, when I was that age. And, for your future, all you did was go into a lesson where, I can't remember what the system, of Kudos or something like that, you filled out. Yeah. Load of questions, they told you what your job ideal job would be and then sent you on your way. You didn't really have any sort of, like, you know, support systems or student services, anything like that, that can, you know, to help you out. And there was, you know, like, mental health wasn't a discussion back then. I think, you know, life could have been very different had the tools that are available now. But having said that, there's still, I think, a lot more that can be done.
Yeah, I think obviously as things have obviously got improved, especially in terms of that awareness and those charities that do help out, the funding has been great. It can be significantly improved. It should be significantly improved. And I talked about that previously. But with that, you know, we've had, you know, social media, which is something that never was an issue, you know, when you were growing up. And that's something completely different, something that we couldn't really have ever predicted. Has had such a massive effect on people that are growing up now, and then, you know, is a reason why we do need these organizations to help people. Just talking about you went into this this job in a pub.
I started working off in a pub when I was 16. I had to a junior license, so I was allowed to serve beer at the age of 16 as long as there was a license holder on the premises. So I was sort of thrown straight from school into this sort of adult environment, which was very sort of the lads down the pub
lad culture. Absolutely infested with it. So how long were you working there?
So I probably worked there for about 3 years, and then
3 years.
I did the I got an MVQ or something like that in bar and restaurant skills, it soon came apparent that you know, the pub life, you know, pub management really sort of becomes your whole life. And I missed out on so many friends' 18th birthdays and social events because I couldn't get out because I was working. that sort of made me realize that this wasn't the life that I really wanted, even though it seemed like, oh yeah, you know, I wanted to sort of, you know, get into it. I always liked cooking and things like that. I thought, like, you know, this would be a great way for me to sort of learn how to be a bar manager and possibly a chef, you know, by doing training mm-hmm. through the actual pub company itself. But yeah, I mean, I think when it sort of came to those social things, you know, I didn't really want to do it anymore. So I was lucky enough that one of the customers in the pub, because the pub was right next to a business center, and one of the customers there, a guy called Sean, owned a photocopier repair company, and gave me a job working in his office. So I sort of got out of there and spent 8 years after that working for him, and you know, sort of started off on like, this is terrible, how £12,000 a year or something like that.
Right, okay, right.
You know, like not fantastic, but sort of over the 8 years, you know, I ended up on quite a healthy salary through that. And I did all right, and I was getting by. It was a small company, so it wasn't really like I wasn't getting constant promotions or anything, but the money was going up based on the responsibility, and the company grew quite large as well. You know, it sort of started off as a very small to more of a medium to large business, and got a few more people working under me and stuff, so you know, it was good. But I think after 8 years, it just ran its course, and I wanted a new challenge. I I drifted for a little bit. I didn't really know. I think this is one of the things that has been sort of like the problem with my mental health has been that I've never been happy, and I've never settled. I've always found I've got bored quickly, and then I self-sabotage myself and I go, right, well, you know, everything seems hunky-dory, what can I do to
take
things up a little bit? And so, you know, I sort of I can't even remember what year it was, 2007 I think I left there, and I went traveling to Thailand for a few weeks, and when I came back, I just I'd given my notice in before I went, but I took all my holiday leave and just went to Thailand and came back, and they sort of they offered me more money to stay, and I just said no, I just don't want to do this anymore. And I don't know, it's I think it's taken many, many years up until this moment, but I think it's just been leading up to, you know, me doing sort of jobs that I've become good at, and I've enjoyed some of them to a certain point, but it's really not what I wanted to do in life. And, you know, I mean, and I think that's been the crux of why I've been unhappy over the years, is because I know I'm not doing what I want to do.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very long time to kind of feel like you're not doing what you want to do. Did you ever, I mean, obviously we're going to uni now to do filmmaking.
Yeah.
Was that ever an ambition of yours throughout those years?
Yeah, when I left school, I did, as I said, I got a B in drama, and I always knew I wanted to be, but we, you know, there weren't media studies courses. It was just like, you could leave school and go to college, and it was like, you could go and do A-level drama or... That was it, you know, like there wasn't sort of courses around, or there didn't seem to be. I couldn't get any information about, you know, like that sort of, you know, getting into the industry, you know, like naturally, like, you know, doing the behind the scenes stuff, you know, whilst, whilst I enjoy it, or I don't think I'm a particularly good actor. So, you know, but I knew I wanted, you know, I directed the school play in my final year, and I was in it as well, but you know, I wasn't very good, but I was good at the directing part. And my drama teacher, I remember her handing out sort of awards to people at the end of the year, and I got the sort of the Stanley Kubrick award, you know.
Not a bad award.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take it, you know. But so yeah, there was definitely something there, and over the years I've tried to get involved in like amateur dramatics and you know, but I tried to do extra work and stuff, you know, like in between my jobs and social life. It just never really sort of, you know, I just guess I didn't really push it far enough and or hard enough to actually go and do something about it. So, yeah, you know, I mean, I sort of, after I left that job that I was in for quite a few years, I went back to pub work again because I just felt like it was my cushion, you know, like
you could fall back on it. It's something you had a skill in.
You know, I mean, it was a massive pay cut, and you know, like I hadn't done it for such a long time that I forgot the reason why I didn't want to do it in the first place. And so, and after about sort of 4 years of just working in bars, and you know, I was a manager of a couple of pubs, and I just again got to that point where I was like, no, I need to do something more than this. And so my go-to was to get back into office work, you know, like customer service. That was always kind of one of my strong points. And so I started off again. I had to start at the beginning because I hadn't really had anything other than this one company that I worked for, which didn't really amount to anything experience. I didn't have any qualifications, didn't have anything. So I started working call centers, and it took me sort of 2 or 3 years to work my way back up to, started off on a low paid call center, and then just sort of got to an investment company, which was like slightly better paid. And then after that, I'd had sort of 2 or 3 more years experience in the offices. So I then was able to go on and find another job and started working for a marble and granite wholesaler, which I know sounds weird. It was kind of like a temp job that I took, but actually really quite enjoyed it because it was sort of like, it was soft sales, it was customer service, showing people around the yard. I wasn't tied to my desk. I had the freedom to sort of, you know, because you're walking up and down a yard, showing people different bits of marble and granite for their worktops and things like that. I got to go to Italy and Spain and Portugal to quarries and Norway and stuff, you know. I mean, I was there quite a few years, and life actually sort of like got quite good over those. I mean, I was there for about 5 years in total, I got myself up to earning some decent money. I could afford to have a nice place to live, and I sort of felt on par with all my friends, you know, like I had a proper job, and I was able to go out and hold my own in a round in pubs and enjoy social situations. And I felt, the only thing that I guess was missing at that point really was sort of, maybe a relationship or something like that. But, that was something that I wasn't actively pursuing. But then it all started getting on top of me again, and I started feeling absolutely really very unhappy all the time. Went to the doctors, and as over previous years, they would give me like citalopram or something like that, that would normally give, a couple of weeks of that, and normally sort of get me back to a level where I could start dealing with my problems and whatever. But just something didn't quite sit right this time, and something wasn't working, and it took me a while to figure it out. But I tried different types of antidepressants and anti-anxiety medications that the doctor was giving me, which nothing seemed to work. They all gave me massive side effects, different things. And I sort of went for counseling, but it wasn't really, the counseling wasn't helping because it wasn't about what happened in the past. I'd kind of dealt with things that happened in my life. It was more about my future. I was just like, I got myself back to a point where, what do I do now? I had nowhere to go. I just didn't know what I was going to do with the rest of my life. And it was like the thought of me just sitting there working at this company or, doing that sort of job for the rest of my life was like, well, is that it? Life's over now.
I know what you mean. Like, I mean, there's a lot to dissect from that. We'll go into it, but just talking about what we were just talking about then, quite often as humans, we're crap at just assuming stuff very, very, very quickly. And then we just get worked up over it. A lot of people, don't have that problem at all. And they're, quite fortunate. But I think with most people, a lot of people put an idea into their head, and it sort of becomes reality. So you were talking about how, you were thinking that I could be at this job for the rest of my life, but it's not what you want. And the idea that you could be that job for the rest of your life. Although unlikely, it in sort of infests your brain, and that sort of overthinking, I agree, does lead to issues. You were talking obviously earlier about amateur dramatics and stuff like that. So, yeah. I mean, how long did you do that for?
I got involved with a play, and they are kind of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, I think it was. And I auditioned for the second lead, but got really bad tonsillitis because I was also doing a office refurb at the time, and during sort of January, February months, and I got really ill, so I couldn't actually do the role, but so I ended up just sort of going along with it and helping out backstage, and you know, I was background singer or something like that, you know. But I, you know, I really enjoyed it. You know, again, it's not exactly what I want to do, but it was just nice to be part of that kind of production. And
it is, it's a nice sort of community spirit when you're working on, I mean, any sort of entertainment, so like TV, film, or, but I've had more experience, obviously, in theatre. I've been in a few productions myself, and it definitely does give you a lot of, like, sort of, it builds you into this sort of community, even if you don't want to be into it. You're sort of forced into kind of getting along with people and talking to people. I mean, that is what it's all about, you know. And that sort of collaboration is brilliant. But I mean, I don't know if you've ever experienced post-show fatigue, or wherever you were, post-show sadness, where you kind of, as soon as you're in like this euphoria of just happiness while you're performing and stuff like that, and whilst it's all going on, and as soon as it stops, you start sort of realize, oh, like, that's all gone now. And then I mean I've done countless shows, and I would experience these moments of just feeling sad that it's over.
Yeah,
but you know, people say that, and you've got to be not sad that it's over, but happy that it happened.
Absolutely. I mean, I think I mean, this is one of the big things that kind of, again, when I spoke to a friend, I did a personality test, and I found that, you know, my levels of enthusiasm and, you know, my commitment to things was actually, was spot on when I was doing it, but I became very flaky because I get bored quickly. And so this was another thing that I thought would work well for this kind of industry, because I think I would work better where you take on projects, you work really hard, you complete, and you get that massive sense of achievement, and then you move on to something else, and you start a new project, you know. I mean, you know, nothing lasts forever in a sense, so you know, you've got to you know, like, take those things, work really hard, and then move on to something else, and then hopefully you find new joy in a new project. You know, and I figured that would actually sort of help in terms of that, stopping that boredom itch that I get when everything sort of starts going really well, and if everything seems like it's great, you then just, or I just get bored and I think, well, is this it now? What's the new challenge? What's the new thing?
Yeah.
So I think a lot of that about it, you know, was trying to sort of maybe understand myself, and I didn't really understand, you know, even sort of after 20 years of work experience and doing stuff, I still didn't really sort of even take the time to think that I could do something or I could get back into education. I thought those things were off the table for me. You know, it wasn't until a friend said, you know, like, why don't you go and do an access course and, you know, like, go to university. And I was, didn't even think about sort of like, you know, film production or anything like that at the time. I just thought, okay, actually, yeah, this sounds interesting. Maybe I can change my career. Maybe that's what's not quite right, is that the reason I'm not happy is because I'm not doing something that I actually love. And, you know, customer service is great, especially when you're young and you're keen and enthusiastic. You know, it's nice to, you know, help people and do things, you know, but over 20 years of working, you get quite jaded by people in customer service, because, you know, it's not nice, but, you know, some people are just out there to be arseholes and, you know, see what they can get from things, and, you know, treat people in the service industry like rubbish because they have an elevated self-opinion or whatever. You know, it's just like, well, you know, it does sort of beat you down over a few years. And so I think that was something that I was also suffering with as well, was just having to deal with the same people again and again, that, you know, like different faces, but they were just the same.
Yeah, I mean, I totally got what you mean. I mean, you know, being in jobs where you, a lot of jobs don't have a distinct sort of ending to them. They're very much just this like long like road where you can come off at any point you want, but there's no actual end, if you know what I mean. So yeah. If you're working for a lot of businesses, you'll find that a lot of them, you know, there isn't, like in a film project or you know, if you're working on a production of any kind, there's always an end product and there's always an end and that kind of like final bow, that final curtain, and then you can work on something else. And that's what's really exciting about that industry. I mean, there's a reason why loads of people want to get into it, because that's sort of what excites you, being able to not just, you know, tell stories that you want to tell and you're itching to tell, but just be able to work in an industry where it's constantly changing and you're going to struggle to get bored. Do you know what I mean? I mean,
I think that when before the sort of route of going into education became apparent, I was thinking about like, okay, so I need to change a career. What should I do? And I thought about like events management or something like that, you know, because I had pretty decent experience over the years and of doing different things, you know, working in pubs as well as working in offices, you know, bringing all of that together. So I sort of went to a path, but you know, I still just, I didn't feel right. Something was missing. Something wasn't quite clicking. And I just thought, you know, like, as you know, and for your listeners, I did get to a very, very dark place. I took a voluntary redundancy from my job because I wasn't doing well at all. I couldn't get up in the morning. I was having anxiety and panic attacks at night, and then not being able to sleep, and then not performing at work all day, and just didn't know what to do with myself. And I was self-medicating. I got into, you know, I was taking a lot of cocaine, and that became, you know, sorry, this is a lot, unloading
no,
a lot.
It's good.
This is what led to a very sort of defining point in my life where I decided to change things, because, you know, I was, you know, contemplating doing very bad things, and did to a point, you know, try and attempt suicide, which, you know, I'm glad didn't happen. But I, you know, it was at that point where, you know, a really good friend sort of stepped in and helped me out, really, and suggested going down the education route. And it just, something clicked and something made sense. And all of a sudden, the light came back at the end of the tunnel and I could see where I was going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it does sort of oft, sometimes take just one person to sort of reach out, to make sure that, just kind of just reignite, like you said, like, you know, reignite a fire that you had inside you. And it's just, it takes, you know, sometimes just a few words to kind of think, that's what I want to do. That's what I need to do. If you can just take us from, you know, that time that you left the company, and the kind of processes you went through between, you know, that friend reaching out and I assume seeing that something was wrong and trying to get you back on track. If you can just take us on that kind of that journey. What it's like to kind of feel like that. I mean, I imagine you felt quite, you know, not just low, but alone.
Mm. Absolutely. Yeah. I was at that company for about 5 years, and about 2 years into it was where I first started getting the doubting and the anxiety and stuff. You know, I was just getting really sort of I don't want to do that. I don't, you know, I wasn't lazy. I've always worked. It was just that I had no joy in anything I was doing. And you know, I was seeing the doctor and again getting prescribed sort of different medications to try and elevate my mood and whatnot. You know, a few different types of antidepressants and anti-anxiety medications, but you know, it was just not doing anything for me. You know, because I think the problem is that, you know, no matter, you know, the medication can elevate your mood and get you to a point where you can deal with your problems, but the dealing with your problems has to come from you and has to come from within. And I've gone through this many times in my life. You know, when I started feeling down, course of antidepressants get me to the mood where I'm being, right, okay, this is what I'm gonna do, and I set myself these little short-term goals, or, you know, I want to do this and I want to do that, and then I'd have something to work on and achieve. But I just had nothing. I was drawing a blank, and just nothing. As I said, the light at the end of the tunnel disappeared, and I just kept going into deeper and deeper into this kind of slump, and I couldn't get myself out of it. Nothing gave me joy, I was going out with friends, and, you know, I started drinking more, and as I said, I started taking a lot of cocaine, which, you know, sort of lifted the mood at times, but all it did was just delay the inevitable massive come down that eventually did happen. I didn't know what to do, and I just didn't have anyone I could talk to, I felt like I didn't have anyone I could talk to. You know, everyone always knew me as the sort of quite happy, pugnacious kind of guy that, you know, especially when we're out having a beer, it's always a laugh and a joke and everything like that. But, you know, nobody really sort of knew the dark thoughts I was having, and I didn't really feel like I could talk to people about that. So things just kept escalating, getting worse and worse, and I was just disappearing into this black hole.
So you were talking about talking about your problems and kind of not making them very obvious. Mm. Obviously, you probably regret that, but can you tell me a bit, or give me a bit of a reason as to why you would have sort of not made them obvious, or you would have kind of painted the front that you're absolutely fine? Because I think for different people, it's a very common thing to do, but people have the different reasons behind it. So I'd just like to hear yours.
There's this kind of, there's obviously a stigma with mental health, and I think a lot of people are afraid to admit that they have got issues. And, I can kind of equate it to things like, like debt as well. People get into debt and, you know, that all they do is they avoid dealing with it. Ignore the letters from, you know, and go into default because they know they can't pay it back, or you know, like you get yourself into such a mindset that it's easier to just blank things and, you know, like, and not deal with them and hide them away. But unfortunately, it's, you know, like, if one thing I have learned over life is that it doesn't just go away, you know, it has to be dealt with. But, you know, it's taking that step of actually admitting that you've got a problem and getting help is really hard to do, you know, especially if you don't feel like you've got that support system around you, you know. And you know, when you're younger, you've got more family, you've got more friends around, and but sometimes still, it, you know, like, you could have loads of people around you, but there's nobody there that you can actually really feel that you can go and talk to, you know, like, I don't know, it's a really hard thing to quantify, just that sort of, you know, and also, you know, you kind of, like, you're admitting that you've got a fault, you've got a weakness, but it amazes me how many people, when you do tell somebody that you've got problems and that you need help, how many other people have been there and done it or gone through it at the same time. And I just, you know, it's just about having that sort of confidence and ability to actually, you know, admit it to yourself as well as to everybody else that you need some help. You know, we're all human.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we are all human. That's the thing. Like, you know, we all deal with issues in different ways. We all have our own, like, you know, defense mechanisms. But, you know, quite often, and I've spoke about this, I think with Gabe, how when you talk to someone about your issue, that's all well and good, but it's all well and good to check up on whether or not they're okay at the same time, because sometimes you get into this relationship where sort of you're the person that's reaching out for help and they're now the therapist, right? But sometimes you do need that kind of role reversal to happen. And I don't know if that happened with you, you know, if people came to you with their own issues and you're sort of pushing yours aside because you believe that yours is insignificant compared to theirs, which is something that happens in your brain. I think, like, you know, sometimes you hear somebody else's problems and you're going through, you know, terrible stuff as well. But you push your own aside because you're listening to somebody else's who maybe in comparison you would think is problematic. But they're kind of, as we were saying, the longer you push it away and the longer you don't speak about it, the more of an issue it really becomes.
Yeah, my best friend Owen was the one that sort of helped me get out of the funk that I was in. And you know, actually at the time where I was probably at my lowest was he was getting married, and he asked me to be one of his best men. And me and his university friend Ben were co-best men, and I sort of planned his stag do, and I did a reading at his wedding, and that sort of you know, that helped me kind of get through everyday life for a little while, you know, whilst we were figuring out what I was going to do. But it gave me a little bit of purpose and a little bit of self-value, and so we spent a lot of the time, or a lot of our time, talking and, you know, going through things, but also with this kind of like common activity that we could do together, you know, planning his wedding and all, you know, his side of things and stuff. And you know, without him and without his support, I think you know, I probably wouldn't have got through it. But as it turned out, you know, like sort of 2 years on, and his marriage has broken down. His wife left him. Discovered that she was actually gay, so a bit of a weird thing, but after 10 years of them, you know, so he's going through a really hard time now, and he's you know, now, you know, when I actually found out a couple of weeks ago, I went up and visited him and just spent a weekend with him, just chatting and whatever, you know. So, you know, yeah, I mean, it's important to sort of, you know, be there for the people that have helped you as much as
you. Exactly.
Absolutely, you know, everyone's going through something and everyone is dealing with their own shit. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I mean, everyone's problems to them are important, you know, but walk a mile in someone else's shoes, and, you know, it's a difficult thing. But, yeah, I mean, I think for people that are suffering with any kind of depression or whatever, that to realise that, you know, everyone has problems or has had problems, and, you know, don't be afraid to talk to somebody about it at all.
Yeah,
because I think, you know, if you actually do talk to someone, you're probably going to get a better response than you think you might.
yeah I mean when I have reached out to people, the I've never had a response that kind of just shows that they're not interested. Because I think as soon as you kind of open up to someone, I think as humans, we're all a bit nosy.
Yeah.
So we can all go a bit like, oh, tell me a bit more. But then that there's no problem with that, actually, because, you know, telling people about your problems is part of the process of healing.
Yeah. I mean, the most important thing, I think, is for someone to listen to you so you can get it all out, because you've got to process everything and actually taking or then people giving advice back sometimes isn't a good thing, because, you know, you even though, you know, they might be a good friend or might seem, sometimes not all advice is good advice, you know, so bear that in mind. But actually, I think the process of talking about your problems, getting it out there into the world, you know, yeah, you can get some advice and you can take what you want from that, but actually making things better has to come from you, and it has to come from within, you know, like you've got to want to make things better, you know, like sometimes people can blame themselves for their own issues, or they might be blaming somebody else for those issues, but those issues aren't going to go away. They're always going to be there. You've got to deal with them, you've got to process them, and you've got to come up with a solution. You know, I mean, the best thing you can do is to get out of any depression, really, is to set yourself a goal or a plan. You know, like, I mean, you know, there are so many different situations, so it's, you know, it's very hard for me to give that advice, but to as a blanket thing, really, you know, I think that, you know, the only person that's ever going to make it better is you. You can't expect somebody else to make things better for you, but what you can do is you can utilize other people to process your own thing and you know, and help you make yourself better.
Totally. I just want to relate to something you said earlier, because I think it's quite relevant to what we're talking about. So, you know, being able to reach out, you often, I think when we reach out, we think first of either family or friends. And then sometimes we'll go to acquaintances and stuff like that, and we'll go, you know, along that ladder. But yeah. I think when you were talking about, obviously, there are periods of your life where you're not in a relationship. Do you reckon, obviously, were those times harder when you weren't in a relationship than when you were in a relationship? Because I've personally found that sort of when you're in a relationship, things become your if it's a healthy relationship, at least, your issues become clouded. You're sort of like clouded with this I don't know, just a euphoria of love. Do you know what I mean? So you kind of forget about all your issues and all your problems. And when you do have issues and, you know, you do need to speak to them, you've always got that person to talk to. But,
yeah, you know, sometimes you probably don't want to appear to be vulnerable in front of somebody that that you love or whatever, you know. So it's all, that can be quite a difficult thing. You know, I mean, it does depend on your situation. And, you know, sometimes you know, if you're lucky enough to have a partner where you can talk through those issues and you understand each other or whatever, you know, then that's great. But sometimes relationships take different forms, and, you know, like, actually to appear to be that vulnerable in front of somebody like that, you know, is not going to work for you, you know, and that can actually cause more relationship issues. You know, I had a friend who, you know, was feeling very low, and his girlfriend said to him, like, I can't deal with you feeling depressed, you know, like, I can't, you know, you've got to fix this or we can't be together. Mm-hmm. I mean, she wasn't the sort of person, you know, she wasn't nasty, she wasn't horrible, but that was just like, that was her opinion, you know, whether you think it's right or wrong, you know, like, on face value. But, you know, I don't think she was doing it to be horrible, but she was just, you know, like, that was a sort of a thing, a part of their relationship that she just couldn't deal with. So, yeah.
I mean, I think people deal with things in different ways, and we've got to kind of remember that, you know, not everybody, you know, is going to have the same reaction to everybody else. So sometimes when you speak to someone about your issues, they'll be really welcoming and stuff like that. And then some people don't know what to say. And that's sort of the fault of our ancestors and the way we've been raised and the way we've been educated over the years. Because, you know, there has been a poor amount of education into these issues. And, you know, if there was I was speaking in previous episodes about how the education system in the UK needs to change desperately, because instead of learning about, you know, important issues which are hitting primarily, you know, the youth. I mean, the youth are one of the most vastly hit people with ill mental health. The statistics to support that, and these are the people that, instead of getting taught about mental health, are being taught about, I don't know, corrosion and rocks in geography. It's like, I don't understand how that's at all going to be relevant to somebody who's 15.
The younger generation are a bit of a disadvantage, really, because they've not got an older generation that have figured it out to teach them.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because we haven't figured it out.
Yeah, so it might be the generation below, you know, me. So, you know, 30, 40 years, we might have a much more just a better society, and a society that can talk more openly than we can kind of now. And I think it's only in recent years we've started talking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the more we do about it now, the more we push for, you know, support and all that, you know, the quicker that will come about. And, you know, and hopefully the next generation won't be having as many issues, you know. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, yeah, your generation really have been let down by mine, because we just, you know, like, come from a time where you just didn't deal with it. You brushed it under the carpet, and you didn't have any kind of support system at all. You know, you couldn't you didn't have somebody at school that you could go to and talk to. You know, there wasn't, you know, like, you talk to your teacher, or and that was it. And then any kind of career stuff was always people brought in from somewhere. You know, there wasn't a student service type thing. You know, the best we had was our RE teacher was, you know, a trained counsellor or something like that. But I mean, he was more interested in watching old episodes of Red Dwarf than he was talking to people about them. I certainly think that, you know, you have been let down to a certain point, and that's probably why there is, you know, because now everything's coming to light, and you know, and there just isn't enough support. You know, people that have gone into mental health work, you know, are just spread far too much across a broad spectrum of something that we really don't know enough about. You know, I was sent for counselling, and the problem was with at that point, I'd already had counselling in the past. I didn't need it. I'd already dealt with the issues that I had from childhood that, you know, were still weighing on me or whatever. I dealt with them. My thing was that sort of existential angst about what I'm going to do in life. And, you know, like, and even at the age of 38, you know, like, when you should have it all figured out by now, I really didn't. And I really don't have it figured out, you know. But, you know, I'm on a path now that, you know, through help and support, I've figured out, you know, I did that personality test, which I'll have to try and find the link, and maybe you can put it into the link to the podcast. Yeah, because it's a really good, you know, like, you sort of take a look at your thoughts, and you and then you look at your thoughts and see how you can turn them into something that could advantage you, or you know, look for the silver lining within those things. You know, like, my thing was that I was flaky and I couldn't commit to anything long term, so I thought, well, okay, well, what kind of thing should I do? You know, like, okay, so events management, project work, things that I can do, that I can get sink my teeth into, I can do well, and then I can move on from. And that sort of, just that one little notion opened up a whole different perspective for me. And so I think, yeah, you know, if you can understand yourself a bit more, then perhaps you can understand where to go with it all. And that's kind of my experience from it, and that's why I'm on the path that I'm on at the moment. And one of the rules I made for myself is that I'm not going to do anything now that doesn't make me happy anymore. You know, whilst I spent a lot of my life trying to live up to other people's expectations of myself, and or to expectations of what other people were doing. You know, like, all my friends were working 9-to-5 jobs in offices or whatever, you know, so I felt that's what I had to go and do, but it really wasn't. I got clouded by trying to live up to those expectations that I didn't actually, you know, sit down and think to myself, which I should have done 10 years ago. It would have been the perfect age. I was like, you know, late 20s, early 30s, I had enough life experience and done a few different jobs, but then still young enough to go on and have a completely different career. I'm now sort of, you know, by the time I get out of uni, I'm going to be in my early 40s. And, you know, I'm not saying I can't have a good career, but, you know, I could have had another 10 years if I had figured it out way back then, taking a look at myself.
I think it's important, obviously, to realise, you know, you think about what could have been, but it's just important. It's more important to think about what is, you know, rather than what could have been, because you can easily get caught up in, oh, I could have done this today. Yeah. You know what I mean? You know, simple little things like, oh, I could have, you know, if you go on a walk and you could have seen somebody or even just stop by the door and have a quick conversation, or you need to stop thinking about the little regrets or even the big ones.
Pragmatic about life, and, you know, like you've got to, you know, if something's broken, you know, you don't throw it away. You want to try and fix it, you know, Yeah, it's a bit like that with, you know, if there's something not right, and you know, you've got to kind of analyze it, you've got to think about things, you've got to try and figure out what you need to change to make things better, and make, you know, and the thing you've got to consider is your own happiness, and you know, so it's not being selfish to sort of, you know, but actually you do spend a little bit of time thinking about things and doing things that make you happy, because otherwise you'll end up being miserable.
yeah, I get what you mean, yeah.
And it's easy to fall into that sort of wallowing in self-pity and, you know, like not doing anything about it. Luckily, there is help out there, but also, you know, like I found that sometimes the kindness of strangers was good, because, you know, I could talk to people that I didn't really know that well, without feeling like I was letting anybody down. I wasn't letting friends or family down.
Yeah.
But yeah, these things, you know, you need to talk about them with people, get support to help you through it. But ultimately, you know, as I said, it's got to come from you. You've got to do something about it to change.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, I've just got a few more points I want to cross over before we do finish today. You were mentioning earlier on about how, you know, the funding into mental health has vastly improved, and as well as the kind of awareness, and its sort of public image has vastly improved. It was seen as something you should be ashamed of, and something that was quite taboo back, you know, I want to kind of relate that to sort of the LGBTQ like community, and how that's also improved. So how's you know, obviously identifying as gay, how's that affected your life, and how has it played any sort of effect on your mental being, and also what's your sort of outlook on the way it's improved over the years?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's been a heightened level of depression, anxiety within the LGBT community, and I mean, I think that's to be expected. I mean, you know, with any kind of thing like that, I mean, you know, that sort of, you know, I knew I was gay when I was 13, but it didn't mean I didn't just have like this big coming out ceremony and that was it. You know, it was like, you know, I didn't tell friends until I was like a couple of close friends until I was 16, more people when I was 18, then family when I was in my early 20s, and then, you know, like actually sort of being openly gay just to anybody is something that, you know, you still change your demeanor in different situations. You know, when you're amongst, you know, if you're down the pub and it's a bit of a blokey, you know, like kind of thing, you sort of don't say certain things. You know, like I always make jokes, and I'm sort of, you know, like I can be quite open about it, and but then sometimes you stifle those things, and you know you just got to be a bit aware, you know. And coming out is something that happens every time you meet new people, you know, like you know, when I went to college last year, you know, like, you know, I had to sort of tell a whole group of people that I was going to be spending a year with that I was gay again. And that's something that, you know, like if one person doesn't like it, or if there's some, you know, or something, you know, you're always aware of these things. So it's something that, you know, keeps happening. It doesn't just stop, and it's not, so, you know, and it's the same again, when we go to uni, you know, we're going to be meeting a whole bunch of people again. And, you know, for me to be truly to be myself, I'm going to have to, you know, I mean, I'm not going to go in and make a huge declaration. Hello, my name is Blair. I'm a homosexual, but, you know, like.
I think you were mentioning about riding on a horse with a flag on your back. Yeah.
No, I'll just see, you know, like a dance and a party popper or something, you know, like, yeah, just, but no, I mean, it's something that, you know, until that kind, you know, you can't be yourself until you feel comfortable. And, you know, like, you know, whilst it doesn't seem like a big issue or as much of an issue these days, because I think that the younger generation are much more you know, tolerant and stuff, so it's not a problem, but it's always still something that sits on your mind. And you know, you have to go through a lot of things in your life to get to that point. For me, it's like, you know, openly gay, you know, like other than sort of like, you know, I don't know, wearing a hat or getting a tattoo, you know, but, you know, it's something that I don't want to hide about myself at all.
Yeah.
But not something that I feel compelled to have to tell everybody all the time. Then, you know, I just wish there was this kind of, sort of sense of like, you know, if you're openly gay, you don't care who knows. So, you know, it would be nice to be able to have some other people know that you are without having to.
I imagine it is a weird thing, you know, it plays on your head, on your mind, like all the time. And I imagine that can be sometimes, you know, quite tiring in a way. You know, to sort of, I mean, I imagine it obviously gets easier, but it's still something that sort of takes a strain on you sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in terms of the way society's developed, you know, the need for gay bars or gay clubs or anything like that is now only more of a novelty rather than a necessity, because you know, it's much more widely accepted. So, you know, we don't like where places like Soho and Canal Street in Manchester and stuff are, you know, used to be a safe haven for, you know, the LGBT community to be safe, and but also, you know, be amongst people where they can interact and, you know, find partners and stuff. It, you know, that the sort of outer town gay bars now just don't exist. You know, there's no need for them because everything's a bit more, you know, open and accepted. But it does make it difficult in terms of actually trying to meet somebody. So what are your options? You know, like going out, meeting somebody, you know, without having that kind of like knowing if somebody's gay, you still, you know, like, and don't get me wrong, you can think somebody's gay and they're not, and you can end up embarrassing yourself by, you know, trying to chat up somebody that, you know, and then you, and, you know, it's normally okay. They'll say, no, sorry, I'm straight or whatever. And that's fine, you know. But, you know, the other option is to go onto dating apps. And, you know, unfortunately, I think that a lot of the dating apps that, you know, sort of like Tinder and the likes, generally tend to get used more like Grindr for the gay community. And it's, you know, it's a bit more of a meat market. And so, you know, I mean, I find it difficult. You know, recently, I think after sort of like the last 2 years of really just sort of working on myself and trying to get myself back to a better place, you know, I'm kind of wanting to date again, and I just don't really know how to go about it anymore.
Have you lost that kind of smooth criminal vibe?
Yeah, especially after COVID, you know, like when social situations are not thriving at the moment. And but, you know, what will happen. And I think, you know, like, I've never sort of thought, right, okay, I want a boyfriend now. I'm going to go out and get a boy, you know, because it doesn't work like that at all, you know.
No.
But yeah, I mean, I think, the whole sort of sexuality thing is something that always sits on, you know, from, you know, wherever you are, you know, it's always going to be something that's going to be that added thing on your mind when you're having to deal with problems. Hence why there probably is more sort of issues in mental health issues in the LGBT community.
I still think there's a lot more the work that needs to be done. And there's a lot more that needs to be done about, you know, the image. I don't know how that, I couldn't suggest how that's going to happen and how we could even really go forward with that. But something just definitely needs to be done. And it's something we can explore in a further podcast, just talking about that.
Yeah.
Another question I've got is, obviously you've gone through this dark time, you've come out on the other side. I was wondering how often is it that you do think about, obviously, how far you actually have come? Because sometimes it's good to reflect on the positives and see actually how far you've come and how much of a better state you're in. But also how much do the negatives play on your head, and do you often reflect about, you know, those dark times?
Absolutely. For the point where I was when I was at my lowest point, which was around September, October, 2 years ago, I couldn't see any way out of it at all. You know, I just, you know, like it, to know or be in the place where I'm at now, I'd never thought I'd come out of that and be back there. But I wish I had known that at the time, you know, that no matter how dark and bad things get, that they can get so much better and better really quickly as well. You know, you just, you know, it's something will just click and change. And, you know, all of a sudden, like I say, that light at the end of the tunnel gets brighter. And I think I'm happier now than I've been in my entire life because I've, you know, I got my grades back from my college access course and I got the top grade I could possibly get. I got my acceptance to Farnham and I can't wait to get started and I can't wait to sink my teeth into it and see what I can do. And, you know, that lust for life is back. But day to day, sometimes, yeah, I can go really low again. And, you know, that generally comes from having to wait around for things and, you know, like I'm sitting here, I'm primed and I'm ready. And, you know, like things like the current pandemic are not good, you know, because they put doubt in people's minds of, you know, what's going on future. So, I mean, that's probably a very hard thing that people are having to deal with at the moment, you know, the uncertainty. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hate it. My anxiety levels go up massively when I don't know what's going on. I like to be in control of things and, you know, as I'm sure everyone does. You know, but, you know, when you're sitting there having to wait for emails and then you get told, you know, like with things like the accommodation that was going for, you know, like everyone thought they were going to hear about it last week and then they've pushed it forward again. You know, it's still all very much up in the air with everything that's going on at the moment. If we have a second spike and things have to be taken back, you know, who knows? So yeah, I mean, those things on a day-to-day basis will always enter your mind and can bring you down to quite a low level. And that's when you just need to talk to a friend and, you know, or just have a moan, get it out there, you know?
It's always good to have a moan.
You know, you feel so much better after it, but, you know, obviously there are certain things that you're not going to be in control of and you just have to embrace that and let that run its course. But what you are in control of, you need to take grasp of and make sure that you do it. And so, yeah, you know, it's going to be up and down and I'm sure I'll have points that'll be where I'll be very, very low again, but I don't think I'll ever get back to where I was couple of years ago. I think I've got too much good stuff going on, and I think the lessons that I've learned from over the last couple of years as well will give me the impetus to keep going. And
definitely,
I do feel low again. Like I say, I feel like I've got a support system around me now. I know the university, they're going to have a support system there, you know, and I've got friends that I know believe in me now. And so I'm not going to say it's going to be clear sailing from here, but I'm quite optimistic about life now.
Yeah, I mean, just to round it all up, I mean, it would be great to hear, you know, just as a show that, you know, things can get better. You know, you were talking about, obviously, college and now uni. What else has happened in your life that has been positive? Have you had any, like, just like these great experiences that you wouldn't have been able to experience if you hadn't come out of that bad time?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the focus of my goals has been around sort of doing this college and uni experience. And so, but, you know, now I'm doing things that, now I'm doing something that I've always wanted to do and I'm fulfilling that sort of thing. But also I'm being very mindful of it being a healing process as well, you know, so I'm not, you know, things don't just automatically get better overnight. You know, something can change in an instant, but you know, you've still got to work at it and work towards things. And so, you know, I mean, I just feel like I've got my ability to sort of, you know, now look at life and look at the things that I enjoy from it. And, you know, I mean, yeah, the COVID thing has been difficult because, you know, you can't go out and do the stuff that you want to do as much. But, you know, yeah, I'm looking forward to not just going to uni for the education, but going there for the experience, you know, as an experience that I didn't get when I was younger. And okay, it might be slightly different from the norm, but I still think it's going to be absolutely excellent. And I'm getting involved with societies, and I want to be involved with the community. And yeah, I mean, certainly as well, you know, with mental health, I want to be involved, you know. I want to make sure that, you know, I mean, I've got a lot of experience and I can help people, you know. I think,
yeah, exactly, yeah, yeah.
You know, why wouldn't I want to do that? You know, we've spoken to many people on the group chat that we have for the new starters, and you know, there's a lot of anxiety and a lot of apprehension about starting. And if I can do anything to help those people, then I will. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great that, you know, you're using your life experiences now. And sort of, we were talking about earlier, it's good to link to earlier, how we were talking about, you know, the therapist and the person that is reaching out, and how you can often just switch roles. And it's like, it's kind of been like a full 180 now, and you're now, you know, the therapist, and you're giving the life lessons. But, you know, obviously at one point that might need to switch, and it's important to just do that. And, I think, you know, we've got to remember that, you know, if you ever do get help from anybody, even if, you know, you're probably not going to be able to help them in the future, just say thank you, or just something like that. And a simple thank you lets them know that you're helping. And, you know, letting people know that you're helping only lets them do it even more. And that's what we need to do. So, yes, a little acts of gratitude do go a long way. Yeah, I was sort of hoping when you were talking about good things to happen that you'd mention meeting a certain singer so that I could mention him in the tags. I just wanted to kind of boost it up, you know, get a hashtag.
A little Matty Hendry,
wow. I mean, I'm so jealous that you got to meet Matt Healy. I mean, that is just, that's up there.
Oh, hi, how are you doing, kind of thing.
I don't care. It's still something I'm envious of.
Yeah.
I mean, I've only ever, you know, screamed hello from him in the crowd. I don't think he's ever heard me, but, you know, that's
I'm struggling to remember, because I'm not sure if this happened. It was January last year, so just before he after he got banned from, he kissed the bassist on stage.
Oh, the guy in Dubai. Yeah. So they did the January tour, and I went to that one in Sheffield. And then they did, obviously, I saw them again at Leeds Festival. And that was only shortly after they'd obviously done, Matt Healy had kissed this boy in Dubai, which I thought was a really powerful statement. And he spoke about it at Leeds Fest, and he was saying how, you know, I reckon if you were in the same shoes as I, you'd do the same.
Yeah.
I just don't understand that kind of culture over there. It's beyond messed up, in my opinion.
What sort of worried me the most was that, the reason I got to meet him, because one of the guys on his sound team went on tour with him, got me tickets, and I've been friends with him for a while, but he was out there in Dubai when it happened, and they literally said they had to leave and wrap things up instantly, because there were, like, basically an angry mob on the way. That they had to get out of there for their own safety. And it's just like,
it's crazy.
Things like that happen in this world now. I mean, I know it's, you know, a different part of the world and different sensibilities or whatever, but, you know, I mean, not to delve too deep into the sort of, you know, the homophobia and all that sort of stuff, I'm sure it's a whole subject altogether, but, you know, I mean, I don't think I've ever really felt frightened to be gay, you know, in you know, out and about. I've never felt you know, when I've been around London or I've been out and stuff, you know, I've never been worried about it. But for that to actually, you know, to be worried about that being part of you, it just boggles the mind. I just I don't think anyone should ever feel threatened about their sexuality or any. Yeah, but yeah, anyway, that's another subject, as I said.
Yeah, it's a crazy subject, and it's one we'll definitely get into, because there is, again, so much we can talk about. So I just want to finish it off with like one final question, and that's all to do with, if you could give any piece of advice to someone that was, you know, 16, they just left high school, and, you know, you said you got straight into work. They don't know where they are, this person. And, you know, they can be male, female. It doesn't matter, you know, whether they're like men, women, whatever. Okay. It's just a general person. What piece of advice would you give to someone that doesn't know where they are, or who they are, and sort of the steps that you would now advise to take?
It's going to sound probably quite patronizing coming from an old bugger now, but, you know, like, yeah, I just, you know, and without sort of, you know, without it sounding too corny as well, you know, actually, it's going to sound really bad, but follow your heart, you know, like, you know, just don't, you know, you worry about what other people think, or worry about, you know, what your family might think, or, you know, if you go a certain route, but, you know, your own happiness is paramount, and you've got to, you know, you're expected from a very young age to make very, very big decisions, and that's not fair, you know, I mean, but, you know, talk to friends, talk to family, talk to you know, strangers, but, you know, like, get support from whatever support is available to you, but, you know, keep your own happiness and keep your own you know, well-being at the top, you know. Obviously consideration for other people and everything, yes, of course, but, you know, do what makes you happy.
And
I know it sounds corny, follow your heart, but that's what you got to do. You just, you know, because it even if it seems impossible, or doesn't, you know, there's always a way to do something. You've just got to want it, and you've got to do something about it.
Yeah, totally. I don't think I'm going to put that into any better words, really, myself. I do just want to speak out just before we do go today. We have now set up a system where you can now send in voice messages or any sort of message to us. So you can either send it through email to talkingheadpodcast@gmail.com, or you can just simply follow the link in, it should be in the YouTube and also the streaming descriptions, which basically leads you to a site where you can basically upload your own voice messages, which we can obviously then play on the podcast and then answer. If you've got any questions, if you've got any experiences that you want to share, you can now do that, and we can sort of engage with the audience that way. And that should be a nice way we can kind of round up podcasts, or even start them sometimes, or even just take a break. But yeah, that's it's been a really nice speak to you, Blair. And
I just had one more thing.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, go ahead.
I've just created an Instagram profile, so if you want to put my details on,
absolutely.
If any
give
of
yourself the plug. In fact, do you want to read it out? I'll read it out on air right now. I'll find it for you, mate.
I'm just saying, if any of your listeners want to contact me about what we've spoken about, then
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you've just started following me. Yeah. So it's Blair, and then your surname is spelled, because I think we're better off. So Baueer 81. But as I said, I'll link it in the thing anyway, and you can obviously go and talk to him there.
As I say, sometimes just talking to a stranger is, you know, just it can be even more helpful. And
yeah, absolutely.
You know, so feel free to message me.
That's the thing. Like, obviously, we said we're going to end. But I do want to speak about how, you know, speaking to strangers is sometimes the best thing to do, because you have no sort of relationship with that person beforehand, and so you've got no prior judgments or anything like that. You haven't got, you know, see, it's nice to just speak to someone completely unknown that you can kind of just reach out for help with. And as I said, my Instagram is just taylor.kedick, and I'll link that as well as the Talking Head podcast, which you can get involved that way and just send a message to that one if you want as well. But yeah, that's the end of today's session. It's been a quite a long one, but it's been really informative, and I think a lot of people will learn a lot from what you've said. And obviously now that you can just speak to people, and talking is what's going to get us forward. That's what I've said in previous podcasts. That's never been more relevant to this one. So yeah, it's just been good. And you know, if you did enjoy this podcast, just make sure just to spread the word, let people know if you enjoyed it, and we can get more people listening. I'm not really bothered about viewer numbers. It's more just about whether or not we get people talking, and the right messages get sent. So yeah, spread the word if you want to, and come back if you want to. It'd be lovely to see you again. But anyway, till then, I'll see you later. Goodbye.